You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Who are you guys?
We're you, dude!
No way. No way.
Yes way, Ted!
Look, we know how you feel. We didn't believe it either when we were you, and we us said what we us are saying right now.
Okay, wait. If you guys are really us, what number are we thinking of?
69, dudes!
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
Good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 69 for the 21st of December, 2011, and Merry Christmas to all. I am joined here in studio. No, I'm actually not joined in studio at all. You guys have abandoned me. I'm always by Skype. All right, by Skype, Josh Philpott, sound off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Christmas. Hooray.
Hooray. And Richard Gray, how are you?
Bah, humbug.
I don't believe either of you. I know you both like Christmas a lot more than that.
Look, realistically, we're all Christmas people. It's just that, you know, the world around us is slowly bringing us down into a horrible pit of destruction, or at least me and Dave, because we work in retail.
That's true. It'll all be fine in a few more days.
God damn.
I'm off for the year, yes. So I'm fine.
All right, this is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. Now, I should explain, because people are probably looking at the running time of this episode and going, why is it so short? This is our holiday season of podcasts. Normally, and Richard and Josh will contest to this, that we normally take a couple weeks off over Christmas.
Yes, we do.
But this year, we've got two major titles coming out that we kind of couldn't ignore. So we thought what we would do is get a couple of short episodes out over this Christmas period so that you don't miss out on these. And that, of course, is Mission Impossible, which opened this week. And we are a few days late, I understand. And next week, we'll be recording another summer show, which will be for The Adventures of Tintin. Now, on the case of these two holiday shows, we're actually going to forego news. We're going to forego all the other, what we've been watching. We're just going to cut to the chase and get to the reviews. So they will be shorter episodes. We're going to do the reviews, and we'll do our famous list of five, because we can't ignore the list of five, of course. And this week's list of five will be five great movie stunt scenes, because I think it's inspired by the fact that we have Tom Cruise climbing around the outside of the tallest building in the world. So
cunning stunts indeed.
Now, I also have to throw out an apology. Now, I can't give you who the name of the person I'm apologizing to, because they never left me a name. But a review or a comment went up on the website for the last episode that got very, very hot under the collar about something I said last week. And so I thought I should address it. I actually apologized on the site, because it wasn't actually meant to be offensive. But if you remember last weekend, I think you guys actually kind of took a gasp when I said it too, when we were talking about the Fox News woman, and I called her an ignorant slut. If you remember that. And this person basically said, I stopped listening after you said that. I don't agree with Fox News, but, you know, anybody, you just can't, you know, personally insult people like that and blah, blah, blah. I want to apologize, because I wasn't necessarily calling her an ignorant. I was actually quoting Saturday Night Live. There's actually a sketch with Jane Curtin and Chevy Chase from the 70s, where they were news anchors, and they would actually have a he said she said section, and every time he disagreed with her, he would say, Jane, you ignorant slut. So problem is, I was very tired last week. I don't think I made it clear where that came from. So
I don't think anything was clear last week.
No, I don't either. So I do apologize to that person if they took offense to that. I did think that woman was particularly ignorant for the stuff that she said. But yes, the slut part was because of Saturday Night Live.
But as for her sexual behavior, we have no idea.
I have no idea, yeah. and I can't comment on that.
Who knows? She could be frigid. She could, all we know.
Absolutely, you know.
She could be Let's just leave it alone.
Let's
leave that subject right now because I think enough damage has been done.
I was working on a complaint for this week, but sorry.
So if that person does venture forward and listen to another episode, which I doubt, I do apologize to that person. It was just a guest post. They didn't actually leave their name. And people leave comments. Please put your name on there. I'd love to hear from you. Okay. And once again, we apologize for a misunderstanding. Anyway. Boys, shall we go into this review?
Yes.
All right, so this week we're doing Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. This film is directed by Brad Bird and written by, now, I'm going to get these names wrong, I'm sure, but I think it's Josh Applebaum and Andre Nemec. Is that right? Nemec?
Who knows?
Nemec. And it's based on a television series, of course, created by Bruce Geller. Now, it stars... We're not going to do a huge cast list here because realistically, the only people of real note in this, Tom Cruise, Jeremy Renner, Simon Pegg, Paula Patton, and Michael Nyquist. I think that's...
Nyquist.
Sorry, it's Swedish. I don't know how to pronounce it.
It's Mikael Nyquist.
Okay, whatever. Oh, Richard! Yes. You're probably under embargo, so you can't talk about it, but can you just comment very quickly, speaking of Michael Nyquist?
Oh, I can talk about it because it's not embargoed per se.
Oh, great. All I want to know is you were concerned that Richard went to see the remake of the American remake of Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, and I just want to know whether or not your fear of it being 7.5 hours long was correct.
No, it's 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Oh, it's still pretty long, though, isn't it? Josh, are we going to see this?
Can I just say, well, we're obviously going to talk about it later in next month, but it doesn't feel 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Is it better than the Swedish version?
Yes, but I didn't like the Swedish version at all.
Neither did we. So it's,
yeah, we didn't.
I don't really like this, but I liked it a lot more, and I find Daniel Craig far more charismatic than Michael Nyquist, but then again, so is a flattened cod.
Oh.
Oh, all right, and I'm not apologizing for that one.
No, because the cod knows it's flattened.
Ah, fair enough.
If I called Michael Nyquist an ignorant slut, that'd be a whole different
story.
That
would be a whole different situation. You're right. Okay.
You guys are terrible.
You know, by now, people who listen to our show should know that everything that comes out of our mouths is for fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some of the things that go into our mouths are for fun as well.
Oh, there is that.
Hi-yo.
Whoa. All right. So now I think it should be noted very quickly that this is Brad Bird's directorial debut in live action. He was an animation director, and this is his first big... Oh, his first ever live action, and boy, what a way to start. We're going to have a look at the trailer right here. First, we're going to say that according to IMDb, the plot summary, I always love these because these are always kind of rolling the dice to make sure these work, but the IMDb synopsis says, the IMF is shut down when it's implicated in the bombing of the Kremlin, causing Ethan Hunt and his new team to go rogue to clear their organization's name. Actually, that's pretty accurate.
And yeah. Can you tell me what the IMF stands for?
Impossible Mission Force.
Well done.
And if you've ever seen Mission Impossible 3, when he says that to Michelle Monaghan, she goes, get out.
Yeah.
One of the best reactions ever. All right, we're going to watch the trailer here, and when we come back, we'll just tell the people what we thought of this. Here we go.
Comm check. We're live.
Target acquired.
What the hell is that?
Abort.
Ethan, what happened in the Kremlin?
It was a setup.
The Russians are classifying this as an undeclared act of war. The blame points to you and your team. The president has initiated Ghost Protocol. The entire IMF has been disavowed.
So what happens now?
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
The secretary is dead. The four of us are all that remains of the IMF. No safe house, no support or extraction. Everyone connected with this man is an asset with valuable information. We come back with our target, or we don't come back.
And how do you propose that we do that?
We take him out.
Yeah, we take him out. But, you know, discreetly.
Discreetly.
operation's over before it even begins.
Would you care to explain yourself, Brandt?
Who are you, really?
We all have our secrets, don't we, Ethan?
Okay, this is a slight wrinkle. We're going to have to go into the server room from the outside.
We?
I'm on the computer.
I still stand by the fact that that is how you cut an action trailer. It is like a film school in a trailer. It really is. All right, so who's starting us off? Do we have a degrees of bad to good? I don't even think we've really discussed
that. We should rate it on the scale of the movies themselves. So it's important for me to kind of figure out where you guys think the Mission Impossible films sit. I think we can pretty much all safely say that two's at the bottom.
Yeah, look,
What?
No, I'm sorry, go on. No, I'm kidding.
My order is pretty clear. I say number one, number three, number four, number two.
Interesting.
I like number one the best. Number three.
I would actually
best.
Agree with you, Dave. That is my exact order as well.
And God help me, but it's the same for me as well.
Well, there you go. So we're on the same page. All right, Richard, tell us, what did you think of Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol?
Well, I thought it was not as good as the first one or the third, but it's certainly better than the second.
Okay, Josh, what did you think of
me? No. Can I have a real crack?
Yeah, okay, we'll try that. A take two.
Do you want a second go? All right, where you go?
I mean, I think that kind of does sum it up, though. It is a good action film, and it's a solid action film. And as Brad Bird coming to live action animation, from live action from animation, you can clearly see that he's adept hand, at live action already. Some of the sequences in there are amazing. We mentioned this in previous episode, but we managed to see two of the sequences from the film in advance, and I feel as though I'm at a slight disadvantage because they were two of the most impressive sequences in the film.
Agreed.
Mm.
And they were that was the Dubai, both of them set in Dubai. It was the very famous building climbing sequence, and also the
there's a chase
through a sandstorm, which is both of which are amazing. And I have to really emphasize again that Dubai building climbing sequence is one of the best stunt things I've seen in ages.
Mm, agreed.
I couldn't help but feel an absolute sense of terror, especially somebody that has climbed. Just whenever even his hand slips, just that feeling just resounded through the entire crowd.
And it's really interesting because when you actually watch it, when we saw the clip, we watched it and we thought, that's really impressive. It's amazing, great looking in IMAX and all this sort of stuff. And of course, your immediate thought is, how much of that is blue screen? How much of that is actually him on the ledge? We know Tom Cruise likes to thrill seek, so some of it's going to be him on the ledge, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then that little featurette came out that we embedded on site that actually showed them making that sequence. And no, he really was wired and outside that building. And suddenly your feet tingle.
Yeah.
And you go, the man is insane.
Yes, he is. But you know what?
God bless him.
I was going to say the same thing Dave said.
It was when we spoke to Brad Bird a couple of weeks ago. He said that what insurance company was going to be mad enough to back that? And he said, well, basically, it was a matter of if you want to be part of one of the biggest films in the world with one of the biggest stars in the world, you just have to kind of support what Tom Cruise wants to do.
Yeah. So basically, what he's saying is the insurance companies had to sack up.
Yeah. And if you want to be part of this, you sack up. Absolutely. Yeah. And this is kind of, that's sort of the Mission Impossible kind of spirit. They kind of just do these big ballsy things. Off they go. The problem I have with this film and why I don't rate it as highly as 1 and 3 is that I don't find that the story itself wasn't that strong to hold all these impressive action sequences together. I mentioned before that I found Michael Nyquist particularly uninteresting. I found him particularly
interesting. He's like a mustache twirling villain.
Well, he doesn't do anything.
I know. Interestingly, he just sits there and schemes.
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly enough, the same problems I had with Mission Impossible 4, and I quite enjoyed the film. And I thought it was a worthy entry into the Mission Impossible franchise, and it wasn't nearly the abortion that John Woo's was with Part 2, you know? And, you know, you sit there and go, it's an okay action film with some really, really amazing moments. And funnily enough, though, I was thinking about this last night, because Richard and I saw the new Sherlock Holmes film.
Mm.
And I kind of had the same feeling, which was I went, you know, it's got some good moments, it's got some good characters and stuff like that, but it all feels a little bit too simplified. Whereas the first Sherlock Holmes kind of made you think. He would put things into motion, and then it would be like halfway through the film that suddenly we refer back to something that he saw, and you kind of had to keep up with it. And in the previous Mission Impossible film, especially in J.J. Abrams' film, and absolutely in the first one, it never pandered. You had to keep up. It was complicated, you know?
This is where I'm going to jump in. Sure. My biggest problems with the film are the fact that when you're watching a film, this is supposed to be spies. These people don't feel like spies. They feel like some sort of ragtag, like mercenary operation. And I mean, I know that they're low on equipment and so on and so forth, but there's no feeling of kind of espionage or anything like that for me. There was no ideas of double crossing and triple crossing. Like there was none of this really intelligent design. And on top of that, everybody just seemed really stupid because you had this dialogue and you had this humor that the series has never really had before that just created this really, well, to be honest, the biggest problem with this film in my eyes was actually Simon Pegg, because the humor just felt Simon Pegg. It just felt like it was written so that he could be himself in this film. And I just got thrown off. Every time that we weren't doing giant death-defying action sequences, I just felt really like, what are you guys doing? Why just go spy or something? Like, it all just felt like a bad comedy. And then it would flick back to these amazing action moments. So it was like, by the end of the film, I was willing to forgive them because they had more of the action than they did the dialogue. But yeah, no, it lost me times.
It's a little watered down. It just felt a little bit diluted, whereas Mission Impossible 3 was like concentrated Mission Impossible, you know what I mean? It's like, and now I feel like this is kind of the no-name brand dish soap that's a little bit more watery, you know what I mean? Overall, the impression I came out with was, yeah, that was okay, but it's really, really bad when you say that's really okay, because it kind of makes it feel kind of mediocre.
Mm.
You know, and we want to say it's good or it's bad or what have you. But when you kind of come out and just kind of go wishy-washy, yeah, it's okay. It was fun. It was all right. You kind of go, really, what did that mean? What did that actually make an impression at all? You know? And once again, yeah, it's kind of the same reaction as Sherlock Holmes. So I didn't hate either of these films. And in fact, I think Mission Impossible is a far better film than the Sherlock Holmes film. But we'll come back to that in a later show. Wow. I think as far as Mission Impossible go, it's the third tier.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
No,
go ahead.
Sorry. That's the second time I've done that to you, Josh. I was going to say, it's got a momentum to it, which you have to give it credit for. And it does, for what it lacks in substantive narrative, it makes up for in sheer forward drive. And you know, it does get a kind of an old school charm to it in that sort of way. It doesn't matter really where we're going as long as we get there in a hurry. And that was kind of another one of the problems with Sherlock Holmes, which David's alluded to a few times, with the sequel, I should say, A Game of Shadows. But I did find, like, you know, in those moments, like when we were there, like there's the sequence in a car park where they have where they're jumping from these motorized cars. Actually, in that moment, I was completely in the movie and I was completely, you know, locked in that moment and wanting to see what happened next. But then as soon as that moment was over, I stopped kind of caring about it. And it's like Josh said before, it's kind of like these characters aren't, they're not doing anything beyond the actual action sequences to justify or to earn any investment in their outcome. You know, you don't feel as though you really particularly care what happens. Whereas in the previous entries, particularly the first one, there was a hell of a lot of double crossing and wondering where the allegiances lie, and certainly in the third one as well, there was a very complex scheme going behind that as well. You certainly had a stronger villain in the third one in Philip Seymour Hoffman than you did in Michael Nyqvist. And I hate to be a Nyqvist basher, but it wasn't his fault in this particular case. I don't think
it wasn't his film.
He wasn't his film, and he wasn't well written in it. No. I mean, he was kind of tacked on because we need to have a bad guy.
And that was actually kind of the point I was going to make next, which is the fact that what we've got is some astoundingly good sequences strung together with really, really paper thin plot lines. Because like the opening jailbreak is a great scene. The building is a great scene. The sandstorm scene, I think, is actually, quite frankly, a work of genius. Because to make a chase like that compelling, where it's so easy to lose our audience and so easy to lose characters, and yet he actually manages to keep you in space and time the whole time, that's a really hard job from a director to do. And he did, and that's got to be animation training, you know, to keep that all organized and in place. As you said, the car sequence with the moving platforms, really good sequence, you know. And you sit there and go, it's got these great sequences. And it's the stuff in between where you kind of go, really, there's not a lot of substance.
Well, it makes you think that maybe it's almost the deficit of the film as well as the good thing about the film, because it's like he knows how to handle these scenes, but it's almost like that's all he really knew how to handle. The rest of it sort of fell through the cracks.
Which is a shame, because he's actually a very strong story director. Because working in animation, he has to be a good story director, you know?
But again, you've got control over the people's emotions and stuff like this. When you've got real live actors, you've got to work with them. Like, it's no longer about getting the character to look how you want them to and just getting the voice to fill in. You have to make these people act in the roles. Yeah. And that's what I wasn't believing.
That's very good. Richard, anything else?
I think that pretty much sums it up perfectly. As I said, I did enjoy it purely moment to moment, and I sort of walked away feeling as though I'd had a good ride, but I'm not necessarily sure whether it's a ride I'd take again.
Richard, Josh?
No, I'm done, man. Absolutely. It sits on my list where I said it's in the third position. It's not as good as what we've already seen. And the thing that annoys me the most about this film is I feel like we're almost getting less and less far away from my favorite film, which is that first one with the darkness and the grittiness and the really...
De Palma's first kind of film like, is brilliant.
Exactly, so and good. I keep getting further from this, and it's like this film is the furthest from that, but it's far better than 2 was.
Yeah, well, look, you can almost write 2 off as not happening. I mean, it was such a it really was. I don't know what John Woo was on. It's the John Woo film that you kind of just push to the back and say he didn't make that. You know what I mean? It's such a shame. When I heard John Woo was directing Mission Impossible film, I went yes. And then when the film finally came out, I was like, oh no. It's like, what the hell? But then again, he's also the director who went on to make Paycheck, which was also not very good. So I think it's probably a good thing.
He hasn't had a good run since then, really.
No, I think it's probably a good thing that he's not making many American films anymore, and he's kind of making Chinese films again. Because I think that's where he really has his strengths. Because
When he's gone back to Chinese films, he has made...
he did Red Cliff.
He made Red Cliff recently, which was, that's big. So you're right. It happened to a lot of people, and it'll happen to some that might turn up in my list later.
If you actually think about it, his American career has actually been pretty much a disaster, with the exception of Face Off, which actually did some decent money and was actually an okay film. But if you think about his American films, Hard Target with Van Damme was his first American film. Broken Arrow with John Travolta, you know?
I didn't mind Broken Arrow, but...
It wasn't great, though.
I didn't mind it at the time, but we're talking... That was back in 1996. Yeah, younger then.
Watch it again, dude. Wind Talkers. Wind Talkers with Nicolas Cage. Also not a real inspired choice, you know? Anyway, we're kind of getting off the track.
He did a TV movie in there called Blackjack, I think, as well, with...
I remember that, yeah.
Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah. That's right. So he hasn't been very inspired in America. Let's put it that way.
No.
And this is the guy, let's remember, was responsible for The Killers, Bullet in the Head, Hard Boiled, you know, A Better Tomorrow. You know, he made some of the greatest action films ever. And you're just going to go... Boy, they brought him over from Hong Kong and didn't know what to do with him.
Nope.
It's really what it comes down to. I think they went, go do what you do. And then when he did, they went, ooh, tone that down. You know, I think, so anyway, that's we're not doing John Woo here today, but I think that's it's sad that I think his film is just so... His film is so much lower than the other three. I think that's the problem. Is it's not
when we say we place number 4, this Ghost Protocol, the third.
Yeah.
there's a significant gap between number three and
yeah,
four.
What I've actually got is I've got 1, 2, 3, lots of spacers for other films. And then he's way down the bottom because I can't see another Mission Impossible film being as bad as his. So, that's kind of scary that it's that situation. Anyway, so look, I'm going to wrap this up and I'm going to say that I will buy the Blu-ray when it comes out, just for... Hello, what was that?
That was my phone in the background.
I will buy the Blu-ray when it comes out because just some of the action sequences and stuff are really good. If people want to go see it, I'm going to say something that I don't usually say, which is if you're going to go see this, go see it in IMAX because it really is worth it just for the price of admission for that tower sequence, which is amazing.
Absolutely.
But other than that, I'm going to say that it's actually a little disappointing, but it's okay.
Yeah, I'd say the same. That's where I sit.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing, but it's okay.
Mm.
All right. Are we all going to buy the Blu-ray when it comes out, though?
Yeah, probably. No, I'll see if someone will send me a free copy.
Maybe.
I think it would be worth the Blu-ray just for the tower sequence. And maybe the Kremlin. The Kremlin was a good sequence, too.
Can we just say that the best thing that came out of this movie for us is that we got David and I got to chat with Simon Pegg and Brad Bird, and that was a great afternoon.
Absolutely, and you can find both those interviews on both of our sites. So go have a look. They're both really – I mean, Simon Pegg's charming, and Brad Bird had some really amazing things to say about making a directorial debut in live action. And they're both fascinating people, so well worth having a listen to. All right, let's move on. We have a list of five. Now, I found this list quite hard. I don't know about you guys. But
I found it pretty straightforward.
Really? Yeah, I was done in about 2 minutes.
I also wasn't quite sure how to describe the scene, so you'll see when I read them off, they're kind of weird descriptions. But our list of five is five great movie stunt scenes. Now, we also got into a situation here because it gets a bit blurry where stunts and CG are. You know what I mean? So I tried to keep it as pure as possible.
Yeah, no, all of mine are pure, man.
Mine are very pure.
Okay, well,
pure as the driven snow.
Cool. Well, let's get this started.
Mine aren't quite that pure.
All right, so let's get started. Who wants to go first?
Me.
Oh, yeah, Josh, go for it.
I just figured no one else was jumping in. So
last time I started you off, and you said, "Why me first? You always do me first."
And that's the greatest stunt of this show. Josh just took that jump first. That's right.
Leap. I just leapt
through
in there.
The Skype connection. Amazing effort.
Anyway, so my number five is when we say scenes, I'm not locking off to a period of time. But mine is you guys have all seen Ronin. The film. It is the car chase scene at the end of that film.
Yeah amazing stuff.
Every single bit of that scene is just amazing. They have cut that together brutally, and you just, there's a small part of you that never stops enjoying it, but there's that other part that's like, this is so ridiculously long. How could they possibly get the money to make this? And then just as you're wondering if it'll ever end, it stops an amazing conclusion. So yeah, that's my number five.
Cool. All right. Richard.
My number five was the first one that I thought of when I did this, and it's from a James Bond film, and you could pretty much include half the James Bond catalog.
I think we probably got the same one, so go for it.
It's the bungee jump from GoldenEye.
No, it's not mine.
That's my number four. That's my number four as well. So you go, Richard.
As I said, it was the first one I thought of when I thought of big stunts, and I think it was because last show, when I did my Sean Beaton death list, I thought of that it was front of mind because one of the biggest deaths in that was Sean Bean being crushed by a satellite. But to me, I remember that for two reasons. One will appeal to you, Josh, of course, because as a gamer, you'll remember that was one of the coolest bits of the old GoldenEye game. But going back and watching that movie, going, oh yeah, I jumped off that. but it was such a spectacular scene. It's 1995, first James Bond film in about 6 years or something.
It was the big return.
The first big stunt. What was that?
It was the big return of James Bond.
Yeah, it was right. It was the first Pierce Brosnan. First Pierce Brosnan James Bond film, and one of the first big stunts in the film is him leaping off a dam with a bungee cord.
Yeah, no, I remember the scene very well. Good scene. Not the scene I chose though. Interesting. I thought we were going to have the same one. We may still yet, though. We'll see. So that's your number four as well, Josh.
But I'll come back. I've got one or two things to add to that.
Okay, well, cool. Josh, what's your number four? Oh, no, no, my number five. My number five.
Sorry, you're terrible at these lists, man.
Do you know what it is?
Josh, you take over.
Do you know what it is? It's ever since we went on Skype. The problem is we don't go around the table anymore. All right. So my opening, my number five is actually a Richard Donner fall. Now, I was like trying to pick one Richard Donner fall because Richard Donner is the king of falls and every one of his films has an amazing fall. So I decided just for its sheer cleverness, I chose the drugged out half naked chick at the beginning of Lethal Weapon. Who takes the leap off the top of the building purely because of how clever that stunt is, because it is actually a live stunt. It is a live stunt woman who goes off. But the fact that we have that top-down shot where she's falling straight towards the car always impressed me. And the fact that the way they achieved that, once again, Richard Donner, genius at falls, they actually printed an enormous canvas photograph and suspended it over an airbag. So nice. She's actually falling into an airbag, but it looks like cars. The giveaway is when she gets too close to the ground, you actually see her shadow pass flat across it. So have a look at it very closely, you'll see it. But she's hot, and it's actually a really good fall. But yeah, it was really hard to pick because Richard Donner has a fall in everything. Mm. So I thought the honorary Richard Donner fall list. But no, I thought no, one will do. Josh, you're number four.
My number four is James Bond. We've already talked about that, but the one thing I wanted to bring up was, for me, it's the reason that that's such a cool scene is if you've ever seen the making of that scene, they actually had to build. They didn't actually do it in Russia; they did it in Switzerland,
right?
And they actually had to build this giant thing that came off the edge of the dam just so that they could get the distance to be safe to jump.
Right.
So that, and even though that was the case, apparently the guy that did the stunt said that when he looked around just before he jumped, there were actual crew members praying in terror because they thought that he was going to die, which I just think is a particularly cool scene, and that's why it has such a great effect.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Richard, your number four.
My number four goes all the way back to 1928.
Oh, wow.
I did a Buster Keaton film.
Oh, which one? Which one?
Steamboat Bill Jr. And now this is the scene where the house collapses down around him.
Fantastic.
I haven't seen
it. I thought you were going to actually pick the clock.
Oh, look, there were so many. There was between Buster Keaton and Harold Lloyd.
Oh, Harold Lloyd did the clock. That's right. That's right.
Sorry. Lloyd did the clock, yeah. There's so many different things that came out of that. But this is basically, in Steamboat Bill Jr., the biggest famous stunt in this Buster Keaton film is he's standing still and the house collapses behind him and he's left standing. Because the house falls down around him just and the doorway kind of collapses right where he's standing. So the whole front of the facade falls down. Now, they would have tested this and measured it out, but the really ballsy thing about this stunt was that he basically still had to stand there and they had to drop a house on him and he had to hope that they'd measured it right.
Yeah.
And this was, you know, he was one of the biggest stars in Hollywood at the time and they dropped a house on him. So.
Sorry, I just love the way you say that.
Oh, yeah. And look, and stunts in those days didn't always go quite so well. I was told an anecdote when I was in film school many years ago. I don't remember the stunt person's name, but it was actually back once again in the 20s. And there was a stunt where a person had to go on the wing of an airplane, of a biplane. They flew over a steam train and he had to jump off the plane onto the top of the steam train. Seems simple enough. He missed the train and landed in a mud pile. And when they went over to actually see him, he was actually standing in the mud. And they went running over there thinking, is he okay? Is he okay? Did the mud break his fall? And what they realized was that he was standing waist deep in the mud, but his feet were actually at his waist. His legs had actually gone through the bottom of his feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He didn't make it, obviously. But yeah, so those sort of stunts in those days, I can understand why he was a bit nervous. They didn't always go to plan.
Wow. Terrifying.
those were the wing it by the seat of your pants days.
Yeah.
All right. I guess that brings me to my number four.
Dave, what's your number four?
My number four is actually from The Bourne Ultimatum. And it's actually the foot chase across the Moroccan building tops.
Nice.
And that leap that he does that goes from the balcony through that little tiny window. At the finale of it. It's a great foot chase and a lot of energy in there. And once again, mostly stunt work. And it's a really, really amazing. Lots of leaping and jumping. Very, very impressive indeed. Okay, Josh, your number three.
My number three is from Cliffhanger.
Oh, cool. Oh,
of course.
Cliffhanger, I chose the plane hijack scene.
Oh, yeah.
which is just crazy in every possible way. Also really ridiculous when you think about it. But at the same time, just the awesomeness of switching planes, basically, and all the shit that goes down during that scene. If you haven't seen it, watch it. If you haven't seen A Trend yet, that's two lists in a row with cliffhanger. I'm trying to push you guys to go watch it again. But it's full of awesomeness.
I actually watched it not long ago. I've got it on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's got some good moments.
Disdain in that Richard. You're like, wow, hey, really?
Richard, does it make you feel any better if I said I got $2 for $20?
Yeah, it does make me feel a lot better. $10 okay. Blu-rays are the best invention.
They're the best thing in the world.
Amen.
All right. Richard, you're number three.
I go all the way forward to 1963 on this one.
Oh, okay.
Great Escape.
Ah.
And it's the motorcycle jump scene. It's a 60-foot jump over a fence. On a motorbike. As you said, in those days, stunts weren't the easiest thing in the world to pull off. Now, interesting enough, Steve McQueen didn't actually do that stunt, but he did a lot of the motorcycle work in that film. His good friend Bud Ekins did that actual jump. But apparently McQueen actually attempted to do it. So
wasn't there a story that he really wanted to do it?
He really wanted to do it, and he crashed in the attempt. So they ended up getting the successful person who did it was Bud Ekins, who ended up doubling for McQueen, I think, in Bullet.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So there's a bit of continuity through there. But, the whole thing's full of great stunts, and McQueen's famous for doing a lot of his motor, because, you know, very avid motorcycle enthusiast.
Yeah, yeah.
He's famous for doing it and that. But that is a particularly memorable moment for a movie that I always say, it's one of those movies, if I catch it on TV or someone's watching it or whatever, I cannot help but watch the rest of the thing through from whatever point I sit down and watch it.
But you never actually feel compelled to put it on.
Not often, no.
And that's the problem I have with it, is the fact that I never feel compelled to actually put it on, but if it's on, I'll watch it.
Mm.
It's one of those weird films where it's like, it's a really good film, and if it's on, I'll always sit and watch it to the end. But for some reason, I just never feel like watching The Great Escape.
There's a bunch of films like that. But almost everybody remembers it for that one sequence. There's a lot of good moments in that film. But
it's actually a really good film.
The good story behind it.
Yeah, very good.
Dave, what's your number three?
My number three is, now it's hard to, because it's actually an extended scene and it's a fight scene. It's actually, I put it down as the chick fight from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It's the scene between the two women in the dojo where they literally go through every weapon in the dojo, which is
actually a pretty amazing.
It is an amazing scene. And when I was talking about this list with my lovely wife, Katie, she actually said I should have got the one where they're jumping from treetop to treetop, because she just loves that scene. And I thought, no, it's the sheer speed and ferocity that these two women have that really gets me about that scene in the dojo. It's fantastic, you know?
Yeah, both amazing weapons crafters as well, just how they move with them.
Absolutely.
Like each one, they have every one of those weapons in their vocabulary, and they use them perfectly. Mm. I agree, man. That was a great scene.
It's a great scene, and Ang Lee just shoots that to speed, and it's just amazing. There's no tricks. There's no let's put it in slow motion here or do lots of quick cutting. He shoots big, wide, two shots, you know, and just lets them cut loose, and it's an amazing sequence. Josh, you're number two.
My number two is from Casino Royale. It is the parkour chase scene.
Oh, yes.
All of it. It's just, as someone that has done some parkour, it's like, to see it in films, this is the first time we had started seeing it. It was like, you had thought, at this stage in time, we had thought that there was no way that we could make anything cooler in films. We had blown everything up. We had flown, we had driven, we had done everything, and it's like the only thing left to do was make just running around cool. Mm. And the sequences in that where bits like where he jumps through the window and Daniel Craig just comes flying through that wall, and bits like that are just amazing. And just that whole sequence through the crane and stuff like that, just amazing.
Yeah,
amazing work.
Agreed. That guy moves so fast. He's just amazing.
Yeah.
He was actually like the parkour champion of the world or something, wasn't he?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I remember reading something about that. He was some champion, some Olympian or something like that. So he was amazing.
Mm.
Richard, you're number two.
Yeah, I just want to say also that the Casino Royale one was on my also-rans there.
Okay.
it's an amazing sequence. My number two is one I was surprised that that Josh hasn't mentioned already, but he may mention yet. It's a Jackie Chan stunt from Police Story.
Yes, it's coming up.
It's your number here. Well, my number two is we might. I've got a few quotes there from Jackie Chan, but basically, I'll set it up now. And we can talk about it a bit more when we hit your number one.
Sure, sure.
I'm hoping it's the same scene as you. It's the scene where Jackie Chan slides down. Christmas lights pole.
No, different scene. Go nuts, man.
Okay, excellent. Basically, this scene is Jackie Chan's fought his way through all these different glass panes in a shopping mall. That in itself was an amazing action sequence because he's literally hand fought his way sliding through all these pane glass things. And it wasn't breakaway glass, it was real glass. Jackie Chan, some people are cheap in Hong Kong. What was that?
Stunt people are cheap in Hong Kong.
They are certainly cheap. Then Jackie Chan realizes that there's a guy on the bottom floor of the mall, so he has to get down to him quickly. And, you know, 'tis the season at the moment, so this is a Christmas show, so he spots some Christmas lights running along a pole. So he slides down the pole, cracking every Christmas light on the way down. Survives the stunt. I found a quote from Jackie Chan on his list of favorite stunts. About this. I just want to read this to give you an idea of why this impresses me so much.
All right.
He said, "We had to do this in one take, so I crossed my fingers and prayed that I'd hit the stunt right the first time and that I'd hit the ground softly. I made my jump, grabbed the pole, and watching the twinkling lights crack and pop all the way down in an explosion of shattering glass and electrical sparks. Then I hit the glass. Then I hit the floor. Somehow I managed to survive with a collection of ugly bruises and second-degree burns on the skin of my fingers and arms."
Let it never be said that the man was not devoted to his art form.
Look, can I ask you in advance? I know this is kind of breaking protocol, but can I ask you in advance whether either of you have a Jackie Chan film called New Police Story on your lists?
No.
Okay, fantastic. That way I can just to add to that story, there's actually a scene in New Police Story, which is a great film, mind you, but there's a scene in it where there are these guys doing like BMX stunt riding on the roof of a building, and Jackie Chan's doing it. He chases his person up there. They run across the whole thing, and the guy basically grabs ropes and basically abseils down the side of the building. So Jackie Chan, deciding he has to get down really fast, jumps on a BMX bike, grabs the rope for the abseil, and literally rides the bike down the side of the building.
Wow.
And it's an amazing sequence. I'm right there with you, Richard, on that sort of stuff.
Feeling I know which one is going to be on Josh's list, though.
Yes, you do.
I was tossing up between that one and this one. So
cool. All right. Well, let's see how we go. My number two is James Bond. This is the one I actually thought you had. This is from To Live and Let Die, which is the famous car jump, the corkscrew car jump, where he literally takes the car, the bridge is curved, and he races the car at speed and literally goes through the corkscrew and lands on the other side. So the car does a complete 360 inverted across the ravine. An amazing, amazing jump. And a real stunt.
Yeah.
Very, very. No,
we could almost put every James Bond.
Well, and that's the thing. That's why I didn't want to do a lot of Bond because it's like, you know, shooting fish in a barrel. It's too easy. Yeah. But there are a couple that are just worthy of mention. That corkscrew jump is a famous piece of stunt work. And it really is. It was a combination of either doing that or another one set in the bayou, which was Burt Reynolds' Gator, which had the sequence where he jumped the speedboat over the road.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is also an amazing stunt as well. But I thought To Live and Let Die had to take that because it's an amazing – because the timing and precision to be able to land back on a curved ramp on the other side, really amazing stuff.
It's like what Josh said about Casino Royale. Even now, the James Bond series still manages to find something that surprises us. And they've done that in almost every movie, even if they've been really shit James Bond films.
Yeah.
And there's been a few stinkers along the way. There's always been something in that film that just made you go, wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever walked out of a James Bond film and just went, it's shit. There's always been a few things in it that I've just been like, that was amazing.
Yeah, there's and, always something.
And it's
there's
why
always
I was so
to
much
see.
Lighter on them as a series.
Yeah, there's always something to see. Even in A View to a Kill, which is a terrible film, it has some great stuff.
Or in Die Another Day.
Or Die Another Day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's round up our number ones. Josh, your number one.
My number one is, of course, the Shanty Town Stakeout in Police Story. Which is the awesome sequence in which they drove cars down through a shanty town, like for real, real.
Yeah.
And it is just nuts to watch. Like when you watch the distance shots, when they have these cameras zooming in on these cars just plowing through houses, it's mind blowing. I've never seen somebody sit down and not just be awestruck by that scene.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Jackie Chan's response, he's another one. He's like James Bond. It's amazing to watch his stuff, and that you can just pick something out of every film.
Damn right.
What is it?
Some of his worst ones all have good scenes.
Absolutely. Richard, you're number one.
Number one is, and this might be yours as well, David. It's from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
No, it's not mine. I thought about that one. I did think about it.
Yeah, it's the truck chase sequence.
Yeah. So
the under the car truck chase sequence. It's look, you know, one of the most famous movies in the world. So it needs a little introduction. But it's in a film that's got so many great action sequences that are so iconic, from the boulder at the start through to the propeller fight and everything like that. It's that is still an amazing stunt sequence, because it's on top of the car, it's leaping from car to car, but you know, when he's clinging on underneath the van, it's just such an amazingly executed sequence.
Yeah, hooking his whip under there and the whole bit. I did think about that, almost made the list, but I had to go with another one for my number one, which is new Oldsmobiles are in early this year. Oh, Disco Pants and Haircuts.
Dude, I left that because I knew it was going to be on your list.
I'm stunned it's not on Richard's list. The mall chase in Blues Brothers.
Very, very close. Came very, very close.
This mall's got everything. I think that is just, for me, look, it was a choice of that or the final climactic car chase in Blues Brothers, which is also, it still holds the record, I think, for the most number of police cars destroyed.
I think the only thing that broke it was Blues Brothers 2000, and they consciously tried to break it.
Oh, well, there you go. But, that doesn't count then.
No.
I thought that, for me particularly, the mall chase is just really unique. With the sheer destruction and everything that's going on in there. It's a great sequence. Really liked it. But Blues Brothers has got a few great sequences in it like that. So, look, I had one other one that almost made my list because it is fantastic, but it kind of just got pushed out by Blues Brothers. I just wanted to throw it as an honorary mention, which is, of course, the final climactic car chase in The French Connection.
Oh, yes.
Which is the ultimate in car chases, basically, because it was so real. I mean, when you actually read the there's a book all about the Twilight Zone incident when Vic Morrow got killed, and in it Richard Friedkin actually talks about shooting that sequence, and he said, we were stupid, and nobody ever in the 70s, says nobody actually thought about it. Twilight Zone was a real wake-up call to everybody, because all these Wonder Kids were out there basically saying, yeah, we're invincible. Apparently the French Connection sequence, William Friedkin was in the back seat with the camera, he put Gene Hackman in the car and just said, go at speed. And they literally went at speed through the streets of Chicago. So all those people jumping out of the way in terror, and all those cars doing near misses, are because they really are being near misses. And those are people in terror. Because they literally went through the streets at speed with the star driving. So
wow.
Insanity. Yeah. He said they would never get approved for insurance for that. They just did it. They said, what the hell?
Unless it's Tom Cruise.
Unless it's Tom Cruise. Oh, dear. All right. So, well, that brings us to an end of another list. Does anybody have any other honorary mentions they want to bring up?
Ben-Hur.
Oh, nice. God. Yeah, with Rolex and all.
Yeah. And I think there's a plane flying overhead as well.
Yeah, I think
so.
To
the shadow of a plane.
But there's also a Volkswagen in Fellowship of the Ring. We can't always control these things.
That's true. Hey, speaking of Fellowship of the Rings, have you guys seen the Hobbit trailer yet?
No, is it out?
It's released today.
Yeah. Oh, all right. I got to go find that. Put it up on the site.
All right. Can we finish the show first?
We're going to finish the show here. if you agree or disagree with anything we had to say today with our review or anything else, or if you just think I was offensive again, write to us at feedback@filmactually.com or send us a voicemail 0280113167. We really want to take this opportunity, even though we have one more show for this year, to wish everybody a happy holidays, whatever faith you might have, secular or not, because, you know, it is a wonderful time of the year. Anyway, you get the idea. And I want to wish you guys a very Merry Christmas.
Yes. Well, Merry Christmas to you guys too.
So tell us, on this very festive day, it's not quite festive yet, but, you know, festive week, where can people find out more about you, Josh?
Me? Well, you can find me at rawdlc.com, though we will be slowing content down. We will still have stuff up there for you guys to read, but we will be taking a little bit of a break over this week. And Hip Hop Net Online will be doing the same thing. So, chill out, enjoy Christmas, and come back and check us out next year.
Fantastic. And Richard, where can people find your festive butt this year?
They can, my increasingly expanding festive butt. You can find me on The Real Bits, reelbits.com, and on Twitter at DVDBits, as always. I won't be slowing down at all because I don't know how. And can I also just say, well, I can take the opportunity just while we're live on the air. I've only been on the show for 6 months, and I really appreciate, you know, when you guys invited me on as a guest 6 months ago, and here I am with my own cartoon.
Cartoon it is! Make Katie laugh.
Yeah. And look, you know, I've had so much fun this year, and I never expected to be a regular part of this, as early as May, you know. So it's great to have been part of it,
and I'm very glad you are a part of it. Thank you, and I'm very glad you're a part of it. As soon as you were on that first show, I think Josh and I kind of looked at each other and went, "Yeah, he's one of us." All right. If you want to find more about me and what we're going to do, you just go to geekactually.com. There's a follow us link on the side of the page. It'll have our Twitter account, our Facebooks, everything else we do. I do want to remind people that we have a comic book podcast that you can check out called Behind the Panels. Please subscribe to that and leave us a review on iTunes. It would be fantastic. And we do want to shout out, very festive shout outs, to some colleagues of ours. Brad and Charlie over at reboundradio.com. You guys are fantastic. We want to wish you guys a Merry Christmas. You're always there to support us, and we're always here to support you guys. So Merry Christmas to you guys. And of course, all of the boys over at Real Junkies, Merry Christmas to you guys as well. You guys have just been fantastic with your plugs, and we're plugging you back, and it's just been a lot of fun. So I want to make sure that our Christmas wishes go out to them as well. Now, we open the show with a clip from Bill and Ted's, because obviously it's our 69th episode. How could we pass that up? And we're going to close the show with a little bit of Michael Giacchino's take on Mission Impossible. He didn't actually write the Mission Impossible theme, but it's his take on it. And I think that's it, guys. I think that's a show. So
yeah, why not?
I think so. And as we explained before, it is a little bit short because it is a holiday show. We will be back next week. Now, I just want to warn people that our normal release schedule is a little bit blown out at the moment because of the holidays. So they may not be on the right days that you expect them, but just bear with us. They will be there, and everything will go back to normal in the new year. So we're just trying to get stuff out for you guys. But with Christmas and everything, we can't always guarantee it's going to be on time at this point. All right. So I think on that note, we should say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to everybody. Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and there's lots to see over this holiday season. So go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. All of us questions are answered in the movies, and we'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody.